What happened to Todd Gurley in the NFC title game, and what can we expect from him in Super Bowl 53? Plus, we've got lots of mailbag questions. What's wrong with the Steelers? What if teams could draft college freshmen and hold their rights? Why don't teams carry extra kickers? And yeah, we're going to fix overtime once and for all right here on the NFQB NFL Deep Dive Podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL Deep Dive Podcast. I'm Gary Gramling, and he is Andy Benoit from the heart, from the epicenter of the Senior Bowl, if you hear any chatter behind him.
Yeah, I'm sitting here right now, and across the room I see Matt Patricia wearing a black hat forwards, not backwards. He stopped wearing it backwards, I guess, when he became a head coach, and he's got the pencil in his right ear.
That's how you know he's grown up and matured.
Yeah, I was going to say, you didn't say anything. Did that not excite you? How often do we begin the podcast with Matt Patricia in the room? He won't talk to us, but he's still in the room. Trust me, I'm not making this up.
It only surprised me because Andy's not at Senior Bowl, the NFL draft event. He is at Senior Bowl, the bowling tournament for men and women age 65 and older. So I prepped that joke this morning, so I figured I got to use it now. Or it just rots on the vine.
Did it make it on your... Oh, well, can I ask if it made it on your Excel sheet?
It did not make it on the
Excel
sheet.
Or do you not want me asking?
Yes, as I mentioned to Andy a couple days ago, I'm so obsessed with spreadsheets. And by the way, I'm going to write about this in my final column, the misuse of spreadsheets and how it just drives me crazy, the misappropriation of analytics everywhere that I see. Not misappropriation, but complete misunderstanding, which I guess turns into misappropriation. But yeah, I keep a giant spreadsheet with terrible jokes and one-liners that I work into my column over the years. And when I get down under 20, it starts to get critical, and I feel like I'm in... like the final season of Cheers or something, when they just kind of ran out of jokes. And then it was like, oh, okay, we'll do one more final hour-long episode, and that's it.
I'm impressed you have a spreadsheet. I mean, I could never fill, the first, 35 lines are visible on your screen before you have to scroll down on an Excel sheet. I could never fill my screen with one-liners and jokes at any point in my life.
It's a mess, and every once in a while I scroll up because it is. I have like probably over 100 now, and I'll like scroll up and see like, oh yeah, I wrote this one 3 years ago and forgot about it. It still works. It's still good. So that's where we're at. So we have the deep dive show, Andy, as we're doing right now, if you are wondering why I'm talking to you. We don't have games this weekend. We are not going to deep dive the Pro Bowl. I'm sorry to disappoint people out there. But what we're going to do is we are going to talk a little bit of Super Bowl at the top. Then we are taking just a ton of mailbag questions. We had a lot of people sending stuff about still officiating in overtime. We will get to those. Some really interesting suggestions for overtime that are kind of opening my mind, and I'm seeing things on a new plane. But before we get into the questions, let's start with one thing that we didn't talk about a whole lot on the Monday show, and that's Todd Gurley. Didn't really do anything in the NFC title game. I mean, this was a guy we were talking about as MVP candidate last year and MVP candidate this season, like midseason, even though he probably wasn't really in the running. It was another one of those can a non-quarterback win it. He spent a whole lot of Sunday on the sideline in New Orleans. And I guess first, Andy, I'll just ask for a general, what'd you think of that?
First of all, to his credit, he said after the game, yeah, I didn't play well, and that was why, and I understood it. And I really admired that was his attitude. There's been a lot of talk about coaches, about what was going on there, and some of the coaches here at the Senior Bowl are saying there's no way Todd Gurley wasn't hurt. But then there's this other group of people who are saying, and I'm in this group of people, that if you could make the argument, and listen, caution here, we're not saying that CJ Anderson's a better player than Todd Gurley. But you could make a very valid argument that Anderson stylistically is a better fit in their system than Todd Gurley is, especially if you're wanting your running back to cut the outside zone runs up between the tackles, which is where the Rams have really been rolling lately. Gurley is an outside the tackles runner primarily. We're talking his style. He's a build-up speed guy. He's a long strider. He's not very fluid in the hips. He's not a lateral mover. Think of C.J. Anderson and those jump cuts he does. Anderson's a better short area runner than Gurley, and that translates better to the zone game, where Gurley's valuable is when you get him on the perimeter and especially in the screen game, which they've done a lot less this year. That's quietly yes. gone away from their system. They're not hurting teams with their screens the same way. So I honestly, Gary, I think it's just – and this kind of solves our ongoing two-year Todd Gurley debate, doesn't it? Is if he's replaceable in their scheme. I think C.J. Anderson is just a better fit right now for him.
Boy. Didn't think we'd be arriving at this place in January 2019. The only thing I'll and I agree with you. I thought it was incredibly, let's say, graceful of him to just sort of take it in stride. And he might be struggling yes. with an injury. He might still be the knee is lingering. I'm sure he's not 100% at this point. But he was. I do wonder how much mistakes sort of pile up for a guy and when it sort of pushes you over the brink a little bit, because he had two brutal drops. He had the one that turned into the yes. interception. He had the one that cost him a third down conversion and they had to settle for a field goal. And then I think it might have been on the next series, though I could have the second drop in this one. He blew a blitz pickup. And I just wonder if it started to sort of snowball on him a little bit and he just started to needed to mentally reset at that point. But it's a good point on yeah. Anderson, but it really is. I mean, this time last year when we were talking about what the Rams do with the screen game and how unstoppable it's become, and they're in the Super Bowl and they just haven't really done it lately.
They haven't had to. Think of Gurley. Let's say Anderson sticks around next year. They remind me a lot of the Tevin Coleman, Devontae Freeman combination. Those guys are in an outside zone scheme very similar to Los Angeles's in Atlanta there. And Gurley is the Tevin, and Coleman's a more dynamic runner than Gurley. Again, that doesn't mean he's better, but Coleman is just as athleticism goes, he beats Gurley if we're just lining up athletic categories. Coleman would be a little bit the Gurley role, and then Freeman is the C.J. Anderson role. Freeman's more of a pure north-south zone runner for the Falcons. It's not a great comparison, but I think these guys, what I'm getting at is I think long-term, and actually for this game against New England, they can form a formidable 1-2 punch. I do think they can complement each other well, but we might not see it immediately. It depends how much of their screen game they want to re-implement if they're the Rams.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a bad time to break it back out, I guess. You want to be expansive as possible here in the Super Bowl when your opponent has 2 weeks to prepare. But that's a storyline. That's something obviously we can all look for on two Sundays from now when they're playing this game. What kind of role Todd Gurley's going to have? I'm sure we're going to talk about it a ton the next couple shows as well, Andy. But shall we at this point? Shall we rip
He's an
open
important
the mailbag?
Player.
Yes.
Yes.
All right. This first one is coming from Jack, and I apologize to Saints fans for further torturing you with this. But Jack asks, or it's more of a statement. I think one factor why that egregious pass interference call in the Rams-Saints game went uncalled is the notion that refs should just let them play during the playoffs. No one wants more flags, but that sort of situational enforcement is a problem. See also the helmet-to-helmet rules. And I was kind of thinking about this, Andy, because, look, we say it all the time. Refs want to keep their flags in the pocket if they can in the big playoff games. No one wants a game to be decided by a call. And obviously this went to the wrong extreme where the game was decided by a non-call or at least obviously tipped quite a bit. It's kind of football the sport versus football the entertainment product. And when you're at this point in the season, the entertainment product kind of wins out here, and I'll even go back to last Super Bowl, the Corey Clement touchdown catch, which during the season that would have been ruled incomplete on replay. And I think we can all agree, though, watching that, that's something, you know, this year it would be a catch, and last year you would have said, well, that should be a catch. That, if you're playing backyard football, that's a catch. And it was almost like the NFL just wanted to avoid the embarrassment of, especially a couple weeks after the Jesse James play, having even more fans who normally, you know, maybe weren't watching the regular season, and then they're all kind of saying, like, wow, this is stupid. Why is that not a catch?
But, you know, let's examine this term, letting them play. They're letting them play. It's funny. I don't remember who was the targeted receiver. We've talked so much about Nickell Robey-Coleman on that pass interference. Who was the targeted Saints receiver? Do you even remember?
That was Tommy Lee Lewis.
That's right. That's correct. Okay. So ask Tommy Lee Lewis if he thought the refs were letting him play on that snap against Nickell Robey-Coleman.
No, it's a very good point. I mean, that play was the extreme. I guess when you get into it, I thought the Bears were very grabby against the Eagles' offensive line in that wild card game. But I don't think it really enhanced anyone's enjoyment of the game, or even for, you know, people like us who enjoy it for the football. I don't think the worst case scenario for the league is just to have a game where there's like 25, 30 flags. But like I said, obviously this non-call went too far to the other side of that.
I'll also add this, and then we can move on to the – because at some point we have to just accept this non-call, kind of like the loss of a loved one. You embrace it, and just got to move on with your life. You got to keep going. You don't forget it, and maybe, I don't know, you do something different next time. But when I watch film, very, very rarely do you see more than one or two instances of the game where it's like, oh, the refs are clearly missing this, clearly missing that. I don't get into the whole officiating conversation as much because I don't think it's as big a deal as it looks on TV at times.
Okay. All right. No, I agree. It is time to move on. I don't know if we ever really fully will. But let's say it's time to move on. This next question, we got a Steelers question here. This is from Lax. Mike Tomlin can coach when the Steelers aren't favorites or when Ben has been out. They have played well. They have a plan. They are prepared. They play hard. But haven't they been as talented a team in the NFL in recent years that has yet to play at that level when it counts the most? Something always goes wrong. It's not always Ben. Is that lack of attention to details, preparation, bad luck? So in short, this is a I'll pose it to you this way. I'll boil it down this way, Andy. Have the Steelers, in your mind, been a disappointment? And number two is there something you could point to and say they are a disappointment because of A, B, C?
I think the answer is yes, a little bit. Certainly a little bit. They're a very talented team, and they've won one Super Bowl in the Tomlin era ultimately, and they've been one of the best teams in the league, or certainly one of the most talented teams in the league. As far as what you point to for what's causing it, it's easy to go question and criticize the culture with Tomlin, say, well, Antonio Brown's out of control, Le'Veon Bell didn't show up, linemen are talking out of turn up against Le'Veon when he's not there. And maybe that's valid. I mean, maybe there's some validity to that. We don't always know what goes on within an organization, though. We don't know how much of that stuff's happening with other teams, and it's just not – it didn't quite creep all the way to public, but there's still drama there. It's hard to criticize an organization's culture from the outside looking in. But if I had to make an educated guess, that's the most realistic educated guess, isn't it? Because – defensively, I don't think they have the problem. They're not world beaters, but I don't think they have the problems on defense that they had a few years ago that we could say, oh, that's what's holding them back. I think they're a top 12 defense now.
I think you could look at their 2018 season, and just talking about 2018, because obviously, the loss to Jacksonville and last year's postseason was disappointing, and they sort of laid an egg against the Patriots, although that happens. You go to Foxborough, you lose games, as they did two seasons ago. But I think there's something to be said for, number one, this year in 2018, a lot of missed field goals, obviously. They had a lot of untimely fumbles, I feel like. No team has no fumbles, but
yep.
They had a lot of weird, guys in the deep red zone fumbling the ball and that sort of thing. So there were some bad breaks in there. As far as assessing it, though, I always think back to what happened with Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers this year, and I know I'm, I know I've got to get off of this. I didn't think the Packers were really that bad in the first part of the season, considering what was going on with the Aaron Rodgers knee. I think it's one of those things where in the past people would say, well, it's a healthy friction between the coach and the quarterback there. Once you have a couple of bounces go against you and the losses pile up and you have a disappointing season, now the healthy friction becomes unhealthy friction, and now it's a problem. I was just having a conversation with a gentleman on SB Nation Radio the other night. You know, the Patriots seem to have what you would call a healthy friction between Belichick and Brady at times. Maybe not at the moment, but we've seen some. You know, the Seth Wickersham article last year. I can't vouch for every detail in it, but I know the sourcing was solid, and I think the from what we know in our office. The general truth was unveiled there, but they keep on winning. Part of it's because they play in a bad division, and they seem to obviously know how to pull it together in January. But they keep on winning, so it's never been well. Now it's a big problem between Brady and Belichick.
Yeah, and I think the reporting was solid on that. I've talked with Wickersham at length about that piece. I think they did a masterful job. It's not an easy position to be in, and the reporting was solid. But it kind of goes back to my Steeler point. You could probably write some variation of that. I remember one time when I was at NFL Films, I was going to say, you could write that variation of that article for a lot of teams in the league, not just New England. I was at NFL Films once, and the Vikings were criticizing Brad Childress publicly, I think it was. Remember, there was a healthy friction with Brett Favre and Brad Childress, too, and that one, I guess, turned unhealthy. But and I read so there's an anonymous quote, and I read it at the table, and Ron Jaworski said, he kind of just, if you'd gone around our Philadelphia locker room when I was there, you could have found 12 guys any given year at any given point that would have said something like that about Dick Vermeil. That's just the nature of football sometimes. So it's a game of friction. It's a game of inches, game of friction. But I think success and winning and losing drives a lot of it rather than the other way around. Even though we just said, well, what's wrong with the Steelers? Oh, maybe there's some friction or they're not quite buttoned up. It's a healthy balancer, but ultimately scheme, execution, personnel, talent, that kind of stuff, that's going to carry the day over attitudes more often than not, I would say.
Well, let's keep it Steelers-centric, but go old school a little bit here. And this is from Paul writing in from Vietnam, and he wrote us a very nice note, unless it was sarcastic, in which case he's a real jerk. But he does ask about one of my favorite all-time players here, one of my childhood favorite players here. Paul asks, if Greg Lloyd was in his prime and in the NFL today, what kind of impact profile do you think he'd have? It's always funny to think of those guys who played in that era being in this era where obviously there's rightfully an emphasis on player safety, because the one thing I always think of when I think of Greg Lloyd, there was an incident with Keenan McCardle. This was back when the Jaguars and Steelers were division rivals, so they played each other twice a year. They were good, and it was a fairly nasty rivalry for a little time in there, but Lloyd told the story at the time that someone had left like a profane answering machine message at his house that his children had heard when he played it, and we're gonna F you up on Sunday type of thing, and he suspected it was Keenan McCardle. So the first play of the game was, you know, Keenan McCardle, the receiver, is just lined up outside. There's a snap, and Greg Lloyd just beelines for Keenan McCardle, who has nothing to do with like a run play on the other side of the formation, and just completely lights him up. And he'd be looking at like multi-game suspensions constantly for that sort of, you know, at the time it was an edge, and now it's just like, wow, that is not suitable behavior for a professional football player anymore. But he was incredibly talented. I mean, you'd like to think if he grew up in this generation, he'd still have the talent. He'd just be kind of a different dude.
Well, a couple things on that. One, what he did to McCardell is what I think the Patriots need to do to those Rams wide receivers in a couple of days or a couple of weeks here. when those guys line up in those tight splits. Two is if you can bend the edge, if you're flexible and have enough quickness, you're going to rush the passer in any era. And number three, what are the chances? You remember Chad Brown, Gary?
Mm-hmm.
The other day, yesterday here at the Senior Bowl, I bumped into him and I asked him what kind of player he would be in this era. And he wasn't too far. He wasn't as far back as Greg Lloyd, I guess. Didn't he come along right at the end of Lloyd? And Lloyd's tenure ends and Brown's began. Was there a little bit of overlap with those guys?
Yep. I'm almost sure they overlapped, unless I'm misremembering my childhood years here. Yeah, Lloyd was sort of back half as Brown was on his front half.
Yeah, Brown thought he could play today's as a kind of a dime linebacker type of guy. He thought his game would be real conducive today. And then the other guy to round it all out was LaVon Kirkland, and Brown very politely didn't think LaVon Kirkland with that 310-pound frame would be a very good linebacker in today's NFL.
That's fair enough. Kirkland was weird. I mean, Kirkland was an athlete. I mean, for his size, he'd just have to play a different position. I don't know. I feel like they could do something with him, though.
He said Kirkland gained 10 pounds every year of his career that Chad Brown was there at Pittsburgh. So that's like 4 years, 5 years, something like that initially. So that's – and, you know, Kirkland was an athlete probably at 280, I would say.
That sounds about right. I think I go with that.
Yeah.
This next one. This
part of
it,
he wore number 99. The 99 made the fatness look worse, too. It's like, who's that big fat guy at linebacker? And then he's wearing 99. You know, he didn't disguise it or anything. It's like wearing stripes when you're fat, and you go out and wear stripes, horizontal stripes.
Horizontal stripes.
It was the football version. Yeah, it's a football version of that.
Nice. Oh, this one's coming from Greg. Bit of a hypothetical here, a draft question. What if teams drafting the top 10 were allowed to draft the future rights for college players? For example, a team drafting 1 through 10 this year could draft the rights to sign Trevor Lawrence or Tua or whomever they wanted when they came out instead of a current draft-eligible player. The team sacrifices their short-term gain for long-term success. Could this eliminate so-called tanking? Because by the time teams try to lose for prospects, their rights may already be locked up. How would that affect the way the NFL approaches advanced scouting? And I should say at the top, the NFLPA wouldn't let it happen. I mean, they basically went after the incoming rookies on the last CBA anyway, and deflated their pay in order to, in theory, get it to veterans, even though it only went to a very select few veterans and mostly quarterbacks. But yeah, I mean, this is the NBA used to do this, where you could draft a guy and hold his rights, and then when he was ready to leave college, you get him. It's interesting to think about now, just because Trevor Lawrence and Tua and even Jake Fromm at Georgia, those three guys might have been the top three picks in this draft if they were all coming out this year.
Well, okay, but here's exactly what happens. Let's say, because I just saw Matt Patricia, let's say it's the Lions that drafted, I don't know why they're moving on from Stafford, but they draft Trevor Lawrence, and someone from the Lions then calls Trevor Lawrence and says, hey, you know, we don't love your offensive lineman there at Clemson. Don't play. Don't play. Stay healthy. We'll get you in camp this year. We'll send you the playbook now. We got a guy you can work with off the books a little bit. And so now maybe Trevor Lawrence follows that. And then Clemson says, wait, what the hell? We lost our quarterback for that. Well, we're not letting the Lions scouts in here to scout the rest of our guys in, because now we're going to lose them. And it happens like that across the country. And there's a domino effect. And the whole system, this free farm feeder system that college football is to the NFL, falls apart in probably 2 or 3 years.
It's not only the fact that it's a free farm feeder system, it is big time promotion for these guys coming into the league. And I know the NFL wants to emphasize promoting their team brands over their player brands for the most part, but there is certainly value in knowing who these guys are coming into your league and getting you excited about them. Same reason NBA put in the rule where they didn't want the high school guys jumping into the pros anymore, because you know, except for LeBron James and the occasional absolute superstar, most of them are just sort of anonymous guys who no one had seen play because they didn't play college basketball. So the NFL loves college football. They love them for that reason and some other reasons. And that's why this is not a scenario that would play out. But it's interesting to pretend, Andy. Sometimes it's fun to have a little fantasy time.
Yeah, I don't know. My issue with fantasy is you can create – there's no boundaries. So there's actually no creativity because there are no boundaries. You don't have to use your brain and think and angle anything around. You just can – it's a free-for-all. So I disagree. I think it's a bad question and it's a bad genre, fantasy.
All right. Let's take one. This is a different Paul. This is Paul L. I'm going to build a question or two off of Paul's question here, but if an offense is playing against an amoeba defense, a defense that is shifting late and moving around, we saw it. I think we last discussed it in depth when the Browns nearly came back and beat the Ravens in Week 17 and what they did in the second half of that game. If a defense is doing that, is there a reason why the quarterback wouldn't just snap the ball early while defenders were all trying to move around, standing up, not set as they were going to be set? I would ask you, Andy, when defenses do that, when they do late shifts, are they picking up on tips that allow them to know when is not too late, basically?
Yeah. Well, first of all, by the way, to Greg, who I said had that bad fantasy question, I would implore him to send in another one because it's a smart bad question. So I want to give him some credit there. It's not as bad as just the fantasy label makes it out to be. Correct. Yes. I mean, so Greg, within two G's at the end, by the way, for what that's worth for the rest of our listeners, I would hope he'd send in another one. As far as Paul's question here, first of all, the amoeba fronts, the risk is if the offense just snaps the ball and then they run the ball right down your throat because everybody just runs forward and bulldozes you. But typically amoeba fronts come in obvious passing situations, so the defense doesn't have to worry about the offense snapping the ball to just run it down our throats most of the time. An offense that'd be a pretty aggressive check for an offense to get into. But the problem is offenses don't, in obvious pass situations, the defense is almost the offense. They're almost the aggressor there, and you're setting your protection based on the pass rush. So when you get an amoeba front and everyone's moving around, if you were just to snap the ball quickly, it's very unlikely you're going to have everyone on the same page with the protection, because they all have, for a protection to work, everybody has to agree where the middle of the defense begins, basically. That's why a lot of times you hear the quarterback calling out, hey, 54 is Mike, 5-4 is the mic. It's because we need to have the mic be the same in everyone's mind, because my assignment's based on I've got guy number two from the mic. I've got the second. I got the first guy from the mic. I've got the mic himself. Oh, that's how pass protections work. So if you can't establish who's who in the pass pro, that's very risky, and there are not a lot of teams that would do that. And where they would do it, and we see this, is if they do have a wide receiver screen or something that gets the ball out immediately from the quarterback, and sometimes you do see that.
All right, let's take one from Ryan here. I had a special teams question, partially because Andy hates them, but also I was wondering, so many playoff games come down to end of half, end of game, field goals, or extra points. Why don't teams have a backup kicker on the active roster in the playoffs when it is win or go home, especially teams that want to dictate low-scoring defensive battles? If you have something to add, Andy, go right ahead, but it's just a matter of prioritizing what's going to be on your roster, and typically kickers don't get hurt. Ryan had sent this in response to the Janikowski injury, and obviously the Seahawks didn't have a usable field goal kicker once Janikowski went down, but kickers don't get hurt very often, and you see a lot more injuries on the offensive line, the defensive line, that sort of thing, and that's where you want your depth to come in, because you don't want to lose two offensive linemen and whoops, we carry two kickers this game, but now we're playing our punter at left guard.
Yeah, well, the kickoff rule changing so that there's more touchbacks, that diminishes some teams used to do this. They'd keep a kickoff specialist and then a field goal kicking specialist, but you kind of lose the necessity for that when they move the kickoffs up so that there's more touchbacks. What might be interesting, they have emergency quarterbacks. Your number three quarterback is on the roster. He doesn't count against the roster unless he plays, and then the other two quarterbacks can't come in if the number three guy comes in. I wonder if they could consider doing that with a kicker, because you hate to see a team get neutered the way the Seahawks potentially could have and did with Janikowski out in a big moment like that. But the other thing you would hate to see on the other side of this is there's a certain amount of drama when a kicker's struggling. Think about Mason Crosby in that game against the Lions, or Cody Parkey. You know, he hadn't struggled that day, but he had a game earlier in the year where he hit the upright multiple times. You get late in the game, what do we do about the kicker? There's a drama to that. You'd hate to see teams just sub out a struggling kicker for a different kicker and eliminate that drama. But, again, you hate to see what happened to the Seahawks with Janikowski, too. So I don't know the perfect answer. Generally, the answer to all these questions that coaches say is just give us more active guys on the roster. We want more players available overall, not just kickers.
Yep, absolutely. And the Chargers actually did do that this postseason. They carried Nick Rose for the Patriots game. They added him as the kickoff specialist, and then Michael Badgley, who had a nice year for them after they added him, he stayed on as their place kicker. Obviously, it didn't really come down to any of that. Rose actually had a rough day. He didn't. I don't think he had any touchbacks in that game. Might have had one or two, but his first couple kicks were short. That's the way it goes sometimes. I like the idea of an emergency kicker though, because it really does. I mean, injuries happen. And like if Russell Wilson hurt his hamstring in that Dallas game, that would have been an even bigger impact. But I don't know, to have like Janikowski go down, and if that game had come down to the Seahawks, you know, basically not being able to kick a late field goal or something like that because they didn't have a guy, that seems like a silly way to have a football game end, in my opinion. Plus, that's a nice.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
That's a nice transition to what's next. We're going to wrap this up with a couple of creative and original overtime thoughts after our conversation about the way Chiefs-Patriots ended. Outside of a lot of Patriots fans saying you only want to change it because you hate the Patriots. Everyone, all of you, you hate the Patriots, and therefore you want to improve the game of football. That was the main response, but a couple people had very really thought-provoking things I hadn't thought of. This first one's from Caleb, and he wrote a piece on this in the Medium. He is Medium, the website. I'll send out the link. I'm not going to read the whole URL, but this is Caleb Engelborg, B-O-U-R-G at the end of that. But he had suggested this is. I feel like this one's kind of a hybrid between college and the pros. You would have alternating possessions, but you would have a 2-minute game clock for each of those possessions. So each team basically gets to run a 2-minute drill with the clock starting. If you have a touchback on the kickoff, clock hasn't started in the 2 minutes as it would during the game. But if you return the kickoff, clock starts there. You have 2 minutes. You have one timeout to go get points in that possession, and then the other team gets the ball. So you'd go back and forth until obviously one team gets a number of points that the other team did not get.
It's all right. When you said it's similar in any way at all to the college thing, I kind of made my mind up right there. I would not make a good juror in the case.
The
second I heard that, I shut off.
I sold it poorly, Caleb. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have started with that because that was a no-go with Andy. But I'd like it better than the current system. I'd take it over the current system. I will say that. I still do like my – I like my suggestion. I like me. I like just having just play football until someone gets a score that someone else did not get. You have equal number of possessions, and that's how you decide a tied game. There's a lot of weird numbers people are throwing out there. As long as we're talking about the misappropriation of spreadsheet information here, that it's only something like 52% of teams winning the coin toss win the game or something like that, but that doesn't factor in ties, and the argument is, well, even college football, because if you did have the system where you're going to alternate possessions, it does give an advantage to the team that gets the ball second, because they then know what they need to do on their ensuing drive. So, you know, if the team just scored a touchdown, well, they're automatically in four down mode, whereas if they started with the ball, they, you know, maybe they would have just punted if they were facing a fourth and eight from their own 30 or whatever it might be. But it is a significant advantage under the current rules for the team that wins the toss and takes the ball, barring any sort of crazy monsoon-like weather. And the other thing is, we saw it in the playoffs this year. We saw it last year. We're going to see it going forward. The best teams in football are going to be the teams that score just buttloads of points. I mean, you're not going to get teams that can't score.
Buttloads. Wonderful.
Buttloads. Buttloads, which I'm told does not mean the part of the human anatomy. Mark Moravec was telling me that the other day, but I don't know the actual origin of that word right now. But, good offensive teams advance in the playoffs. So even in the playoffs, it's even more skewed in advantage to the team that wins the toss and therefore takes the ball.
You know what? Why don't they just – let's do this. Get rid of the coin toss and say whichever team has the most total yards when the game ends, that's the team that gets the ball first, or that's who gets the ball first. Because – no, I'm serious. Because that takes fate and luck out of it. That puts some actual football in it. And what that will do, Gary, is force teams – remember at the end of the half where you give up the 40-yard dump off because it's harmless and the clock runs out? Now teams are playing for all the snaps again. So you make the whole game more exciting.
No one would ever take a knee again. I'd love the also like the 3rd and 28 plays where a team's just trying to pick up 15 yards there, and then they get up celebrating and high-fiving after that. That'd be pretty awesome. I thought you were going to say this, Andy, because we got this from two people, and I had never even considered it. And over the past 24 hours, I've been thinking about it a lot. Now, let's see. I want to get the names right. Bruce Florman sent this, and we had one other person send it, or basically something very similar. And rudely, I did not write his name down on our outline. But as I ramble aimlessly, I will look it up and I will tell it to you right now. And that person's name is. George.
This is, come
there
on.
There you go. This is, it's good podcasting. George sent it in. George didn't send his last name, so it's just George. Basically, the problem with overtime, and I think this is a good point, the problem with overtime is that it's treated like this huge reset, and okay, we're going to have a coin toss, and we're going to go. Bruce and George suggest just play. The clock says zeros, the game is tied. There we go. We're just going to play until the score is no longer tied. So what you would have seen on Sunday night with the Chiefs-Patriots, they probably got the ball like on their own 30 or something with 14 seconds left or whatever it was, and they took a knee. They would just start that drive, and they would just play it out. It would take away a little bit of the it's clock management. It's part of the game for a coach, but I'm always a little annoyed with the score too fast type of thing. I think that's sort of gone off the deep end with some of the criticisms of the Chiefs should have taken a knee twice before they scored that last touchdown on 3rd and goal from the 7 or something like that or stuff like that. But yeah, basically, just it's not a coin toss. It's just whoever has the ball at the end of regulation. Just keep on playing. Game just picks up right there, and just keep going until someone scores again.
I would not like so if they like if they have the ball at the 40, then overtime starts with me at the ball at the 40. Still, is that what you're saying?
Don't even consider it overtime. Call it overtime because it is overtime, but it's not a new period. Or maybe you just call it the fifth quarter, and you if you really want to, you can switch sides and then. And do it like you would between quarters. But essentially, it would be the same effect as the end of a quarter as opposed to the end of a half or the end of regulation, with the exception being the next time the tie is unbroken. Well, look, I was skeptical when I first read it, and it's kind of growing on me.
I like the idea of ending the game when the game ends. I don't, I'll be honest with this. What's wrong with just giving each team the possession and saying it's that's good enough how it is now? Someone's going to have to poke some holes into what's wrong with the, if you score a touchdown, give the other team a chance to score the touchdown, which is taking it further than it is now. Why is that not enough for people?
I would, and look, Andy, that is my idea. That is, I'm the only one who ever thought of it. But it is a good point in that the team with the ball second in that case has an advantage. It's not the same advantage as winning a stupid coin flip gives you at this point, but it is a significant advantage to know whether you can, you know, you do you need 7 points to tie the game? Can you win it with 3 points? Can you win it with 7 points? Like, having that information is a big edge, because you would play the game differently. If you, like I said, you're facing 4th and 8 from your own 25-yard line on the first possession of overtime, you're punting. If the other team scored a touchdown in the first possession and now you're facing 4th and 8 in your own 25, you're automatically going for it. It's nothing but 4-down football going forward. It changes enough of the
right.
dynamic
no, I,
that
I get
it's,
it.
It's
I get
imperfect.
It, but, so here's the other thing they can do then. If they don't want to take my total yardage idea, which I think the more I think about it, the more I think that's a genius, brilliant, off the walls, perfect idea, is just the home team automatically wins the coin toss or goes second or does whatever they want to do, and you make home field advantage that much. Maybe it's 5% more important. And I would, by the way, only implement this in the postseason. I would keep the regular season overtime as it is, because I think you do need these games ending at some point. You can't let these guys run themselves into the ground running the ball 50 times each in the fifth quarter because it's a rainy day and somebody wins 12-9. I don't think that's congruent with the league's safety policies and trying to keep guys, I don't want to say as fresh as possible because they do the Thursday night games, but I don't love the idea of these regular season games going on forever. But postseason, obviously, that's a different element. Make the home field 5% more home field advantage and just give the home team the ball or let them choose possession order.
I do like that too, especially in the postseason, because it does now the regular season is getting a little more emphasis as well, and what you did during the regular season, which
right.
as we've seen some years, not terribly meaningful when you get to January football. We'll have to, you and I, Andy, we have to settle on a solution that our podcast will officially sponsor and put forth as the Grambling Benoit solution. It's probably going to be mine with yours as a little tweak, which I think is what we kind of...
It's going to be mine with the yardage, because that's too good of an idea the more you think about it. Every down in the game becomes important now when you do that. The other thing is, would a team consider, if they have 4th down and 20 to go and they're near midfield, typically that's a pooch punt kind of situation, would they consider going for that? Because if you come up short, you still gain, let's say you get 18 of the yards, you still gain 18 yards there. And those 18 yards gained are probably more valuable than the 12 yards that you get off of the gaining from not kicking the end zone or whatever it would be. You know what I'm saying?
I want to put it on this right now. I think this is our solution that we'll come to. At the moment, at it's like 10 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday, January 23rd. We're gonna do overtime, not the continued. So we're setting aside the fifth quarter for now. It's gonna be overtime. Each team is getting equal number of possessions. The home team gets to decide whether they want to have first possession, second possession, or, you know, sides of field, I guess, if it's some crazy weather game. But they get whatever advantage is built in there. And my last question would be, since we're doing the equal possessions, do you alternate it? So the home team says, we want the ball second. Okay, so the Patriots have scored a touchdown. Chiefs come back and score a touchdown. Do you now alternate it? Now the Patriots get to get the ball second, so the Chiefs have to play without less information on this next thing.
The yards idea is better, and for the next show, you're going to have to tell me why it's not better, which you still
because,
haven't done, by the way, so far.
Because it's literally just fantasy football. I'd love it for the for the comedic
effect.
No,
it's not. It's not literally fantasy football. Let's not be cavalier about using the word literally. You're too old for that, by the way. That's millennial stuff to use that word.
That was very cavalier. You're right.
You have to tell me why it's not a better idea, because it's not fantasy. That's a nothing statement that you just made. It's not fantasy football, and it's certainly not literally fantasy football. Tell me why that wouldn't be a lot better, to have the total yards mean something more than ever now if you do it that way. Defense and offense, by the way. It's not just gaining yards. You're incentivized to stop them on defense, too. Like you said, the 4th and 20 where they tackle them for 15 and high-five each other, they're not doing that anymore. They're now playing two-man. They're bumping and running with them. They're trying to give up 7 yards, not 15. They're trying to give up 0. You're trying to get a sack in that situation and swing the total yardage that way. Everything becomes more exciting, and when you get the defense actually playing and none of this soft prevent stuff, you get more big plays offensively, or the potential for that. All this does is propagate big plays, which is what people want.
I like that part of it. I like the effect it would have. I just think it's an absurd way to do it. Points. I mean, the game is ultimately about points.
No. So you like the effect it would have, which is the only result of the whole thing. All this does is have an effect. There's nothing else it has. So, which means you like the idea, you just don't – what was the other part? I like the effect, I just don't like the effect is essentially what you said?
No. I like the consequence it would have, in that it would make people do insane things. But I would enjoy the effect it would have if you said, let's play let's play 5-on-5 football inside the 20-yard line. We'll build a little mini field there and do it that way.
You would not enjoy that. You would hate. Come on.
I probably wouldn't
come on.
Enjoy it.
We owe our listeners more respect than this. You would hate that idea. This idea I've stumbled upon, which I now demand you let me write an article for. So I claim this. I'm going to write
terrible.
An extra article either this week or next week. So tell. No, it's not. It's not terrible. Tell Moravec, tell Adam Dorson, the magazine editor, and tell Chris Stone, we've got a cover story here. The yardage idea is the best idea I've had in a long time. And I didn't even think of it before the show, by the way. This is on the fly.
I don't think that's going to surprise anyone. We should. Do you remember? You might have been too young for it. The old SI cover with the University of Miami should drop football, and all it was the text on the front. There was no picture. It was just that text. We can do a cover like that.
Yeah, that's fine. We just have to get the idea out there. You got to tell me why it's not a good idea still. Genuinely tell me. And you don't have to do it now, because I know not everyone's this kind of on-the-fly thinker that you're witnessing on this end of the conversation. But you need to come up with an actual rebuttal.
I am telling – I'm giving you the rebuttal right now, because the game is about who has scored more points. You can't break it down into what might have led to points. I mean, would you do turnovers? Turnovers tend to turn into – scoring more points than the other team. So you just say, you know, whichever team had more takeaways gets the win?
No, because I think that factors into the yardage indirectly a little more. So, no, I wouldn't do it that way. I would do the yards. The yards is the only way to ensure, because turnovers will still carry the same significance or relative, I mean, 99.5% the same. The yards is the only way to ensure that every single play in a game now becomes significant. And it's also, in some ways, it might discourage punting, which I think makes the game more interesting too. And they're trying to get rid of special teams anyway. They're trying to get rid of these dangerous kickoffs and punts, and this is perfect. This is a perfect idea.
I think we've reached the end of the show, Andy. I think you've descended into madness, and that means it's all over in Mobile, Alabama, and it's time for us to wrap up.
No. Last thing I'll say is I would hope listeners go back about, 10 minutes? We started talking about this 10 minutes ago, and listen to Gary's initial response to the idea, which was, hey, that's actually not too bad. I like the yardage idea. The only reason he's saying I've descended into madness is because I'm getting passionate about it now, and that threatens him.
Oh, Andy, as you were, I was polite about it, and I was actually texting Matt Patricia, and I said, I know you can see Andy right now. Just make sure he's okay. Make sure he has not completely lost his mind. And I was trying to soothingly talk
Shows
you,
what you know. Patricia
you
has left.
I know. Oh, man. No, I would, like I said, I would love to see some of the stuff that got brought out on 3rd and 28 and the impact of that. That would be fun. It would just be nonsensical. All right, that's going to be a wrap for this one. We'll have the Sunday show. It's the show we tape on Sunday, and you hear it on Monday. We're going to talk the Super Bowl. We're not going to talk the Pro Bowl a whole lot. Send more mailbag questions. Next week's Deep Dive show, we will take more of them. For now, thanks to our researchers, Reed Foster and Ryan Taylor, who make us sound smart every week. Well, pretty smart every week. And thank you, as always, to our producer, Shelby Royston, and all the guys at Cadence 13, who make us sound good every week. But most of all, as always, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB Deep Dive NFL podcast. You got Breer, Vrentis, Connor Orr on yesterday's show, breaking down a bunch of stuff from the conference title games and obviously the big one coming up. We will have probably some prop bet talk on Friday on the MMQB Gambling Podcast, so make sure you check that out. And yeah, for our show, send those questions to talkback@themmq.com. And of course, subscribe to our podcast, the MMQB Podcast Network, wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Radio.com/10things, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys on Monday.